Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are Reclaiming the Republic, and it is now or never. We wanted to get into and kind of wrap up this concept of the design of our Constitution, and I'm liking it to an immune system, or very similar to the human immune system, when it is functioning right. See, the problem is that within the design of the, you know, the cellular structure of a body, these things are programmed in. The immune system is programmed in, and it functions without you having to think, okay, go do this. It just does it. The brain just understands all of these things that have to be done. I mean, most people think that the brain only does what you think it's doing, what, you know, your thoughts, those types of things. But it's processing and operating your body like a computer simultaneously while you're doing all these other things. And so there are, at the cellular level, there are things that cell does that is second nature as it responds to either a cut or being impaled. There's different types of things that can happen, or a bacterial invasion, viral invasion, what have you. Anyway, so we want to get into this, but we're trying to set up this case of what it really takes for us to get into this sad state of affairs that we are as a nation, as far as living under tyranny. So let's kind of move forward with, the obligatories, and then we'll get into where we left off in our last episode. Now, I do want to say that, we've only got a few more days. I understand it's antithetical, and I know a lot of people may be looking at Christmas and what have you. I will tell you, increased tyranny will not make your Christmas any better. And as a matter of fact, the best Christmas present you can give to your posterity is liberty. Giving them the ability to live, freely, to freely choose what they want to do, and getting government out of our lives is foremost. So that being said, I would highly recommend that you throw some love, some money towards Paul Venable's campaign for the U.S. Senate. Out of all of them, I mean, there's Dan Scadam and so forth, but Paul is making a showing, and what he's doing, and we'll get into this down the road, he's beginning to establish, I'll just say, a niche and or precedence so that we can actually start building a template of how to actually create, because it's not hard to lead, and it's not hard necessarily to create a movement, but we just want to prove that if you build a movement, which is really what we're trying to do, we're trying to get you to become a part of this movement, monetizing the radio show. There's all sorts of things that we want to get done in building this movement. And so giving Paul support, because he's going to transition. I know that, his wife and family will definitely love to have him back, but he'll be transitioning. He won't be going around and town halling and those types of things every day for the last couple of weeks of the election. I mean, that becomes very, very rigorous. And I think the last time I spoke with him, he was pretty tired and drained. And I'm sure right after the election, he is going to get some needed shut-eye and some rest. But that being said, that doesn't mean that a Rolling Stone gathers any moss. They don't. And he's going to, because I know he's got travel plans, he's got to go to a convention and so forth. So anyway, the whole point here is to try to get his funding to where he's been, where he at least reimburses his expenditures. Because I know he spent more money out of his own pocket in doing this. And he's just like you and me. I mean, he doesn't have, this rich uncle or he's not getting the funding. If you want to go look, I mean, I think there's websites out there that can show you how much funding he's pulled in, and you should be amazed at how much he is doing. And he's not doing this, folks. This is not about Paul Venable trying to make good money and get himself rich by being in the U.S. Senate. He is doing everything he can to be the public servant that America needs. And that's what we need in presidents. That's what we need in every public servant. So it's good to have somebody emulate exactly what we want out of a public servant. Because I'm telling you, nobody in the federal government, as far as public servants go, I don't see anybody emulating the epitome. And if I'm wrong, you let me know. I mean, there have been many that have, you know, done a lot of good, but I don't think many of those, even Michelle Bachmann, even Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, they understood the Constitution, and Michelle Bachmann did a good job at standing for it, but I don't think she, at that point in time, understood what and the types of tools she could use and how to exploit that. And this is why we need to really start looking at a movement for the 2024 campaign. And I believe that you will be instrumental, that we've got other people. We want you to be a part of this. We'd like you to actually initiate your campaign on the Constitution and seriously look at becoming a county commissioner, a state legislator, state senator, what have you, governor, what have you. So anyway, if you've got the ability to throw a donation towards Paul Venable's campaign, I would greatly appreciate it, and I know he would too. It would be nice to actually have, you know, some additional funding actually covering the cost that he's paying for out of his pocket to do all the travel and everything else that he's doing. As you know, the show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. Now, when we move forward here, one of the things we kind of covered, and what we really haven't finished covering, because the real subtitle to this concept of an immune system is that the ratcheting of tyranny. When I say ratcheting, it's an incremental, you know, little tighter. The tyranny gets a little tighter. It gets a little tighter. It has been a very slow ratcheting process. And for us to be in this position today, the ratcheting of tyranny required two parties to succeed. Because what ends up happening, and you've actually seen this before, and this is where they go back into the, you know, the dark recesses of wherever the uniparty meets and says, what the heck are you doing? You're undoing some of the things we did. You can't do that. Well, I'll give you an example. You know, there may have been times a long time ago that they, you know, the progressives would take, you know, a little bit of territory and the conservatives would take some of that back. And in some ways, we still kind of see that every once in a while. But in the big things, in the key things, we don't see that. The latest one we have seen is where the Supreme Court came along and made its ruling. Now, that had nothing to do with conservative side of government. It basically had something to do with, well, the Supreme Court really, you know, got a little moral or little marrow in their backbone and took the appropriate stand and said, you know, this is not a federal issue. It's not within the Constitution. But don't think that all these other things that aren't in the Constitution is something that, you know, falls into the same category. It's amazing how, you know, we start, I guess, identifying and seeing how things lay out in front of us. It's amazing how it all of a sudden starts making sense, and when they state something, they basically have to come back around and say, pay no attention to this. This only applies to that. You know what, folks? When it comes to a principle like limited government and enumerated powers, that applies in every facet. If it is not enumerated, it is not a power. If it is not enumerated, it is not a role. If it is not enumerated, it is not a property. In other words, when they come along and tell you this is federal property, but it's property that's not enumerated in the Constitution. It's not property. So anyway, the fact of the matter is, over the course of the past century and a half, the ratcheting of tyranny required both parties to be able to get to where we are today, to get to this level of succession, to be successful. And so when we started going through all of this from the beginning, and I only used the railroad because at the same time we were looking at supporting the railroad, the federal government was literally supporting the railroad and helping in the 1820s and going into the 1830s, that at the same time we saw Monroe and then later on in 1830, Jackson veto the Congress's abilities or their attempts to create footings for the Department of Transportation. And yet they were playing around in helping and using federal tax dollars in assisting the railroads for, you know, spanning the continent and moving to commerce and so forth. And I'm going, hold on here, folks. Don't you see the irony? And if you understand what we're showing you here, you can actually kind of see how, you know, people didn't necessarily see why. And I think that, you know, when it says that we need to promote, that doesn't mean we need to fund. And, you know, so it does say that in the Constitution, Article 1, to promote science. Railroad is commerce. It is not science. And so, and it didn't mean to fund science. It just meant promote. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two messages.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so what we want to do is kind of catch up to where we were. We started off, like I said, with the railroad, and without going into all the other details, they went into all sorts of things from welfare to farmers, the trust busting, the Federal Reserves, and into banking, and then seizing control over corporate finance in 1921 with the SEC and so forth, the federal control of labor, federal control of retirement with Social Security, and then the federal control over the production. Now, when I say the production, now, there's a really good book out there, and it's called Liberalism fascism. Yeah, I think it's fascism, and it's, I think, Jonah Goldberg, and it has a longer title to it. But and when we get into the break, because I don't write this stuff down, it just comes to me, and so I will pull up the title for you when we go to break, when we come back from the next break, so that you can, if you're really interested, because in this book, he talks about some of the crap that happened during World War I and World War II, and more details on World War II, and how FDR seized full control, and I mean full control of our federal production. This is why you couldn't buy tires. You couldn't buy a car. There were certain things you just couldn't buy, and there were, you know, rationing books or coupons, what have you. And, you know, people were happy? No. I mean, it was a dark day in America. If you think the pandemic was bad, you know, locking you home and so forth, at least, you know, there were certain things. I mean, you could, it was tough to buy a car, and the production of cars really was stifled, but it wasn't the same. I'll tell you what FDR did, they came very close to doing. And this only proves that when your liberties are seized and tyranny is applied to the people, there's really no hope that we're going to get all of our liberties back. Because even when they, we're going back to, you know, regular operations, that, no. As a matter of fact, I even proved to you that when they started creating the FBI, and when we gave them prohibition in 1919, and, you know, they created this huge enforcement over alcohol, tobacco, and so forth, well, when we repealed that, they didn't repeal. This is the whole point. The progressives never repeal. Big government tyranny never repeals itself. I mean, a monster does not cut off its arm that we gave it and said, okay, you don't need that anymore. We're taking that back. No, they'll keep that arm. So anyway, the next big step, and this is the big one, and I wanted to really focus on this because I want you to look at President Eisenhower. He was a Republican. And one of the things I really didn't go through in, you know, the other ones, but I can. We actually talked about, you know, FDR doing the last few, but the SEC and the seizure of corporate financing and all of that, that was Hoover. And the federal controls over banking, well, obviously that was Wilson. We did talk about Wilson doing that and Teddy doing stuff. And, you know, Polk was involved in the... President Polk was the one that was involved in the Department of Interior, the Department of Home. I mean, so when you start looking at who was the president at the time and where were the controls of Congress? What party had the controls? Was it the Whig Party? Was it the Democrats? Who was in control? And you'll see how it goes back and forth. And when the new party comes in, they do not dismantle this beautiful gift that the other party gave them. It's like NAFTA. When NAFTA was created, you know, and the Republicans took over, did they dismantle NAFTA? No. The reason why NAFTA was passed was because Clinton was president, and the Democratic Congress had to swallow that pill. They couldn't let a president come out and say, we need to do this, and then them not do it. It was their president. And so this is how we've been manipulated. I can't emphasize enough what a big ploy that was, because everybody saw George H.W. Bush as a globalist. He was in the tank for global companies and this global alliance and a one world economy. I mean, he literally did a whirlwind tour several times over talking about one world and a new world order. Literally talking about a new world order, folks. This is not a conspiracy theory. That's what he was doing. And when we look at how he had such a tight and close relationship with Bill Clinton, when they met in Kittybunkport, Maine, This is when George Herschel Walker Bush actually decided he was not going to campaign and challenge. And this is when they figured out that they needed to have a third party candidate run. Now, I digress because we're really focused on the education welfare that Eisenhower installed in 1953. Eisenhower, if you really look at it, I believe he was elected in 1952. And so when Eisenhower came in, the movement was coming towards creating this from the Democratic powers. Why did Eisenhower sign this in instead of vetoing it? Right? I mean, he was literally being given something that was a leftover, this kind of cast that they couldn't get done. They couldn't get this one bill done in creating the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. And so why did Eisenhower sign off on it? More importantly, when Eisenhower was ending up his term in office and he warned America about the military-industrial complex, how come he didn't tell us more importantly? Because if you really look at the Constitution, that's an enumerated power. Why didn't he warn us about this health and education and welfare complex that he created? Maybe he was just trying to preserve his legacy. I don't know. But none of these men over the past century, none of these men were really, as innocent and as great as most of us think. And so, as a matter of fact, even as it was pointed out, as evil as Woodrow Wilson was, there are people that have got, and it came to my attention from Mr. K, that we were, talking about Woodrow Wilson, that Woodrow Wilson, apparently there's some documents that point to the fact that he knew what he was doing was inflicting pain and transferring wealth from America to other entities via the Federal Reserve and so forth. As soon as he was signing that, he knew what he was doing. And it was almost like he was remorseful. I don't think that's the case. I honestly think that, he knew what he was doing, and it may have come across remorseful, but look at what this man did. I mean, he fought for the League of Nations. He fought for the global environment in moving America away from the Constitution. I mean, look at what he did as governor of New Jersey. He was a leopard with really evil spots. And those spots only got bigger when he became president. And so as we, move forward from the health and education and welfare in 1953, the next thing that the federal government did was they wanted to become the controllers of class warfare and divisive tactics. And so this is when they established, but they never made this an amendment. They established a protected classes and control over racism in 1964, but they never made it constitutional. I don't believe that the states would have allowed them to actually be able to create quotas and so forth. But nobody realized that, when you accept an unconstitutional act like the Civil Rights Act of 1964 as the law of the land, that was not the law of the land. That was the law of federal land. That was the law of D.C. and territories. Acts only apply to, especially if it's not within the enumerated powers. Now, if it is a declaration of war and it's something like we're going to be going after these people act, then that would be constitutional and that would be applicable. But the Civil Rights Act, I'm sorry, as much as it pains me to, look at, all of the other problems and the way they become divisive, it really does stand out that we don't want the federal government being able to manipulate races or anything. Have we gotten to a point where we can behave better? Well, there's no doubt in my mind there are still white people out there that are racist. But I believe that's the minority, and I believe the majority of the racists are those that aren't white. because there seems to be a more division and, I will just say, race baiting and that type of stuff. I mean, the evidence is out, folks, that it's coming from the disparate groups. Even Asian racism has reared its head in America. And, you know, when you see such a minute minority, anti-Semitism is on the rise in America as well. Don't think it isn't. As a matter of fact, I've seen indications in the news and so forth that's proving that anti-Semitism is alive and well right here in America. So anyway, it is not a good thing to allow the federal government to actually control something so divisive. I mean, we're already divided and divisive over culture, race, and these gender, these types of things. Why would we give them that tool to be able to manipulate us even more? We'll be right back after these two promos.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so one of the things that Milton Friedman said is if you give the federal government authority to manage and regulate the Sahara Desert, within 5 years, they would run out of sand. And there's a lot to be said with this, because when we start looking at every time they've started getting their fingers into something, it becomes manipulated by them to a point where it actually becomes a weapon, right? Let's look at the next one. So we just covered this establishment of the Civil Rights Act in 1964, where, and actually that wasn't constitutionally done. And again, it was only applicable, but they actually got the states to go along with it because they started using force. They stepped into Arkansas and so forth in dealing with the segregation states. And to be honest with you, I think it was important and an important change and an important turn for this nation to have to kind of suffer through that. But to make something permanent and to do something for the right reasons and then stop, that's great. But to come back and continue to manipulate, I mean, why is it that the Supreme Court has to even have a conversation on affirmative action, giving one race, one class of people, or a group of people, a gender, doesn't matter what it is, giving one an advantage? There should never have been a design of advantages, whether it been written in the Constitution or not. You can't fix disparities by, you know, going out and saying we're going to give one species or one thing an advantage over another, like going into the desert and saying, well, we're going to give the rabbits, you know, the advantage over wolves and, you know, the predators. Then you have a rabbit problem. Anyway, so the next one that actually became the new problem on the horizon was housing. And what about the federal control over the transportation? Oh, and then what about the federal control over the environment? Now, to be clear, the civil rights, the federal control over housing, and federal control over the Department of Transportation, where we had three presidents veto and say, you can't do that, voila, they did it in 1966. I said, you know what? Nobody knows about those three vetoes. Nobody knows that history. That is good and buried, and voila, we now can do what we were told we couldn't do. Ha, ha, ha. Well, the EPA was a creation under Nixon. Isn't that ironic? So these things that, you know, seemed, okay, social side, but social environmental wacko, Nixon? Nixon then took us over, moved us off of the gold currency. And so when we look at the change of our monetary system, one of our worst presidents, folks, one of our worst presidents was Nixon. He's got to rank up there because he set us up into this critical, you know, the one thing that may cause our demise because of inflation and because of, you know, this ability to just keep on creating debt and debt and debt and creating fiat currency. You realize by taking us off the gold standard, that's how they could inflate our currency and assume more and more debt. So, and it got to a point where China and many other countries, as you know, most of you may know this, that we had to give away gold because people going, you know, that's a lot of debt. We want some collateral on that. In other words, we had to pay with gold as collateral. And as far, you know, that just amazes me that they actually use gold as collateral and not as outright payment and say, well, we'll in good faith, we'll give you this. But even still, transferring our gold, that was reckless. Absolutely reckless. Our government. So, at what point do you realize that, one, we have had two parties playing us, and two, we have advanced so far down this path of the ratcheting of tyranny that they're controlling and manipulating so many different things that you can't, I mean, is it impossible? Can you not fathom how the federal government has been committing warfare, economic, social, cultural warfare against the people and against our Constitution? Can you not see how what they're doing is by design to put us in a position to where we can do nothing? And I'm telling you that they know we have guns. You know this as well as I do. They know that we have the ability to fight back. And so what they're doing is they're waiting, buying their time, and they're going to use leverage. They're going to do anything and everything they possibly can to destroy you, me, and anybody that speaks up. This is why we need us to just kind of, we need us to actually take our shift and take our position on what we do and doing the right things. And so we'll talk more about that when we get into the building of the county. But the fact of the matter is, as we've kind of covered all of this, here is the final straw. In 2001, with the Patriot Act, In 2001, this is where they created footings within that Patriot Act to allow the federal government to authorize the selling and transferring of, and this is all unconstitutional, by the way. The Constitution does not allow them. They do not have any enumerated power to direct the selling of any state sovereign land. Now, it's one thing. They do have the power within territories to be able to disposition them. In other words, they can dispose of a territory. Let's just say, you know, in trying to work out some agreement, we've got Guam out there in the Pacific, and the Philippines go, you know what, we're looking to, you know, kind of grow, and what we'd like to do is we'd like to, you know, trade this for that or what have you. And so, I mean, Guam or Puerto Rico, well, so Puerto Rico is on its path of becoming a state, but because Puerto Rico is still not there, we could actually make a deal with, you know, some other country or some other island out there in the Caribbean to say, okay, Puerto Rico is now a part of that conglomerate of islands and dispose of it and basically sever our ties with Puerto Rico. But they cannot do that to a state. They cannot do that to any land within that sovereign state. That state is the party of the Constitution, which the federal government is fully obligated, legally obligated, to protect its sovereignty. To think that it can sell any land within a sovereign state is antithetical to protecting its responsibility in protecting the sovereignty of the state and the sovereignty of the nation. To allow our nation to be overran is just antithetical to their responsibility of safeguarding, you know, our nation and our culture. And when I say culture, I'm not talking about racial culture. I'm talking about the culture of liberty and the understanding of civics, citizen responsibility, those types of things. So when we start looking at this long, I'll call it a play. This has been this long TV show of next episode to the next episode, this meandering of the federal government taking us down these long unconstitutional trips. We're going in so many different directions that, and I didn't even get into the Department of Energy. I didn't get into a lot of other things, right? Because these are all sorts of things that were, you know, thrown out to us by the federal government, said we're going to seize control of this. And when you start looking, it's amazing how not one party undid what the other party had done. Not one. Congress did not have the authority to do anything that they've been doing, but they do have the authority to stop doing things that are unconstitutional. As a matter of fact, they not only have the authority, but they have the obligation to do so. So why is it that they're doing nothing in lieu of this obligation? Why aren't they doing what they're supposed to do? Well, it's because they're making money. It's just like the patriots out there that are making money entertaining you over the problem. They're not entertaining you regarding the solution. They're not going through what you have to do and the tools that you have to start fighting this. They just want you to sit there and listen while they give you these great pithy, you know, lines of saying, you know, look, this is just tyranny. This is just, you know, a problem. And what are you going to do? They keep on telling you to wake up. Ah, yeah. Like, okay, wake up and buy my book. Wake up and come to my shows. You know, we're going to be doing this whirlwind turning point. Is going to do this whirlwind or the nationwide tour of taking back America. And then when they're all done, America will be farther down the clutches and into the grabs of the globalists than ever. Because they're not taking back America. They're not reclaiming the Republic. We'll be right back after these two promos.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so obviously the beast has the ability. When I say the beast, okay, just every time they create a department, Department of Housing, Department of Energy, and so forth, that entity, it's almost like an appendage, and that appendage comes up with these, let's just say, different hands, these different weapons that it starts using, creating policies and things that actually attack you and actually attack us and attack us in different ways, both on the economic side, on, you know, all of a sudden you may want to run, you know, gas in your car, and they're making policies to say you have to now start using electricity. All of this stuff, folks, by the way, it's all unconstitutional. They have no authority to do any of this. But the fact of the matter is what they're doing is they're using these appendages as literally tools to commit warfare against you and what you are doing, to force you into their controls. And so when we start looking at these unconstitutional, what we consider benign, you know, just, you know, why did they do that? I'll give you a case in point. Biden's executive order 14019, promoting access to voting. He did this in 2021. And so they're getting ready to actually start deploying this going into 2024. They didn't do much. As you know, they did not do much. But the White House, if the Congress flips and they can't get the congressional legislation that they want, then he will use his administration and his executive branches to start doing things to, you know, start moving the elections in the ways that they want. I mean, when we look at the Community Reinvestment Act, the Equal Employment Opportunity Act, the Equal Housing Opportunity Act, those types of things, when we look at those things, we think, yeah, okay, yeah, on the face of that seems like, you know, okay. But down the road, somebody else comes along and tweaks it, and somebody else comes along and weaponizes it, and somebody else comes along and gives it teeth, and then all of a sudden it's biting you on the backside. Because we've allowed ourselves to swim in the political waters of division, and when I say division, I'm talking division over, you know, these what I would consider ancillary issues, your Second Amendment rights, abortion, and these types of things. We've allowed ourselves to actually dive into the water chasing this mermaid of our choice, because that's what they are. They're all sirens singing, and they're swimming around this big, I'll just say, underwater, you know, coral reefs and rock area, to where they're getting you to sail over into that direction to basically crash you, or to basically sink your ship, because that's what the siren song is, right? And so why is it that we allow ourselves to chase our mermaid instead of actually grabbing the compass and saying, because the compass does not just have one point on it. And it does, you know, it doesn't, you know, just go back and forth of on point, off point, on point, you know, it's not binary. You know what I mean? So in other words, it's round, it swings in 360 degrees. That compass will just keep on spinning. If you had a binary compass, or if you had a one point compass, it wouldn't be round at all. It would just be almost like a stick, where it would basically little move whether it, you're on or off. And it would just stay off until you point it in the direction that you want it to go. And voila, all of a sudden, okay, now you're on. And so if you understand what I'm saying, that is what division, that is what myopic causes people that want to get involved in a single issue. They are the ones that are being divisive. Anybody that says it's about this one particular issue. No, it is about the Constitution. That is just one of many things. What's sad and what's so funny is, you know, like you have two different groups. You've got the critical race theory group, and then you have the people that are, you know, fighting the sexual dysphoria and you know, the promotion of homosexuality to little kids. And then you have maybe some people still out there fighting Common Core. There are groups that have been created fighting Common Core. We have three groups now in the recent history of grassroots movements that are spending money to actually fight this sexual dysphoria, others that are fighting critical race theory, and others that are fighting this Common Core, fighting Common Core, just to go back to, you know, other standards. Folks, how divisive can you be over one issue when the whole thing is all unconstitutional? Why isn't the issue the federal government has no business taxing us and manipulating our education system? They shouldn't even have a Department of Education. Shut it down. Why do we allow ourselves to be divided in this one little direction on education? And then we have these three different points that we can point to. Actually, there's probably even more than that. There's probably even more than that. That's how divided we are. When are you going to realize that we are the problem? Ah, yeah, just keep chasing it. Keep chasing that thing that makes you feel better. Well, I really don't like that, so I gotta chase that. If you understood how important it is to love the Constitution, support it against enemies foreign and domestic, then you would understand that you would actually be solving the problem when you demand full compliance of the Constitution, not just getting rid of the Education Department, not just getting rid of this, not just getting rid of that, getting rid of all of it. There may be some nice little things. There may be some hooks that they put into us. Oh, well, they're giving us this money. Folks, that money will go by the wayside, but opportunity will be opening up immediately. Your states will then have the opportunity to do things that you couldn't even imagine, because the federal government has seized those controls. Oh, well, you can't mine in your state, your county. You can't harvest your lumber. You can't grow food. I mean, they're growing tobacco still, and the federal government is still subsidizing tobacco farmers for not growing tobacco, because it's more important that we transfer our wealth to other nations and getting them to grow. This is how we have created an economic war against America. Our own government is doing this. So when we really start looking at what it takes, and this is where we actually make this turn, we actually start realizing that when we see things that aren't right, we have to, just like an immune system, we have to attack that bacteria. What we have is we don't have just a bug. We don't have just a little skin infection. We don't have just an impalement. We have a head wound, a sucking chest wound, a capitation. I mean, the amount of damage, and this is the beautiful thing about this Constitution, the amount of damage that this Constitution has sustained so far is so huge. I mean, it is so prodigious in such a negative way that one would think it's done. It's over. There's just no hope. But if you understand the divinity of the design, it all starts healing when we all start calling for the healing of the entire Constitution. When we only look to fix one little thing, then we are actually in decay because we don't understand how the whole thing needs all of the appropriate powers, roles, responsibilities, and properties to function. All of these other perversions will continually pervert, twist, and contort our government into destroying us. So the only way we can do this is by understanding the immune system. So this is where we need to get into the structure of government. The structure of government is what? Is it we the people? Yes. But it's not we the people in a democracy. We actually, you have the privilege of having representatives at three different layers of government. You have a representative in your county, you have a representative in your state, and you have a representative in the federal government or the general government. Let's not call it federal because we do not have a federation. We have a confederacy with very limited federal government or a very limited general government. And so when we look at the body of government and our different representations, who should have all of the control? See, we have three governments that should be competing, but they shouldn't be competing at all. As a matter of fact, during the ratification debates, which we read, we talked about the importance that the federal government could only focus on those enumerated powers. So if you get the federal government to focus on its enumerated powers, then all of a sudden all power shifts back towards the states. But hold on here. The states are the problems too, folks. Because do you really want your state government to allow and to basically bow and kowtow to the democracy center? When I say democracy center, the population center where the people want full control of the state. In other words, all those people in Chicago demand full control. So when we come back, we're going to dive into the body of government and we're going to dive into this immune system of what we can do and how we can actually kickstart this constitutional immune system. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.